The arts are the gymnasium where we develop those capacities and take humanity into all the other areas that matter, which is why we have had the art of bricklaying, because we have understood that any activity raised to its highest expression is art, and yet we push it to the periphery of our schooling.
That's Eric Booth. Booth is widely considered to be the nation's leading teaching artist and trainer of teaching artists. He currently teaches at the Kennedy Center and is also the artistic director of the mentoring program at Juilliard. Booth is the author of The Music Teaching Artist's Bible, Becoming a Virtuoso Educator. Eric Booth talked to Steve Paulson about the current state of arts education in American schools.
Oh, it's a fascinating time. You couldn't have asked at a more interesting time. For arts education itself, the field is reeling from two major events. Number one is the economy, which has once again put the arts on the chopping block and has really put most of arts education in a defensive position. And at the same time, it is reeling from the effects of almost a decade of No Child Left Behind, which was not intentionally put out to minimize or, let's say, peripheralize arts education, but has had that incidental effect.
Because various educational resources are going in to teach other subjects, and so arts get squeezed out in the process.
Yeah, I'd say that's part of the reason. I would say through the years of No Child Left Behind, the pressure on schools and educators to produce results according to the testing schemes with some pretty heavy consequences if they didn't succeed, that even schools that had high art intention found it harder and harder to keep the priority place, to add those 100 little extras that can make an arts program really flourish, even without a lot of extra money, that we have to admit the arts really took a hit in the No Child Left Behind era. I can't remember the exact data, but for every one school that has increased their arts learning in the last decade, three or four schools have significantly decreased the amount of time and resources they provide to arts education. So here we have a field that is reeling. However, at the same time, there is this opposing trend of, some people are calling it interest in 21st century workforce skills, creativity skills are rising in the public mind, particularly in the business mind. And so the call for what the arts can provide is actually increasing at the same time as their profile has been decreasing. And because we have a new administration and nobody knows quite where anybody sits at this point, the field is in a swirl.
You have talked about arts educators as agents of art experience. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. We live in a country that has, by default, defined art by its nouns. We think of art as the stuff. You know, the stuff you pay $40 to go see in a concert hall, the stuff you pay a few bucks to go see in a museum. And indeed, those nouns are a kind of art, but I am interested in art as a verb. What people do when they create those nouns, what people do to enter into the worlds of those nouns. And I think all the learning potential is in the verbs. So my work is about engaging people in their natural verbs of art that they have in themselves. When the kid goes home, she engages in all kinds of artistic investigations where her personal interests carry her. And her parents engage in the verbs of art when they have a really lively conversation or tell a story brilliantly. And I think it is those verbs of art that light up learning. In fact, I even think the words arts education are almost redundant. When you get down to the atomic level of what's happening in the human being, the choices we make, the cognitive work we do to make decisions about creating something, it's irrespective of media. And what we do to enter a complex world, it's the same verbs, whether it's an interesting story told by a friend or a complex painting painted by Rembrandt. Hmm.
So from a pedagogical standpoint, are you saying that it's more important to teach kids how to draw, or, you know, to get them excited about drawing, rather than studying great painters like Rembrandt and Picasso?
I guess I'm saying that, although I find in practice they work awfully well together if you sequence the flow right. There's such a natural flow in intrinsically motivated learning, or if we might use these very unfancy words for art, anytime you want to make stuff you care about. If you are engaged in drawing a self-portrait and you pour yourself in because it is intrinsically valuable to you to make this thing, suddenly the techniques that you can learn along the way and for the next self-portrait, you gobble them in as a hungry learner. If you're not engaged in the personal relevance of creating that self-portrait, you can master the techniques and you can regurgitate information you've been taught, but you haven't slipped into the verbs of art. Similarly, once you have been intrinsically invested in the personal relevance of, let's say, that self-portrait, then what Rembrandt did becomes very interesting to you because he's a colleague. He isn't, you know, information you need to master, or he isn't a problem you need to solve. He's a colleague that worked on problems that are personally relevant to you. And I find when you can get that motor started, you get intrinsically motivated learners that completely understand the connection between technique, original creation, and masterworks. They're false distinctions once you're engaged.
So have you come across particular tricks or techniques that help students get engaged? I mean, that really to get passionate about various arts?
I wouldn't quite call them tricks of the trade, but it's something that all good teachers do. In fact, I wouldn't even say it's limited to good arts teachers. There's nothing more powerful than a really effective question, a question that startles a young person into the interest to come up with her own solution to something. I can give you an example. Let's see. Yeah, I was working with a history teacher who was working on American history and the Underground Railroad. And the impulse was to bring in, you know, some of the songs of the Underground Railroad and the way they were used for guidance, coded guidance information. And the kids were vaguely interested in this. It was more interesting than just memorizing facts, until the inciting question I thought of lit up the group, which was, and I asked these high schoolers, when do people use music to stay alive? And I saw the room go quiet, and I saw every kid think, I use music to stay alive. How have other people used music to stay alive? And suddenly, their relationship to that whole body of work, the songs they learned, the songs they then composed, the history that was directly related to it, had a kind of vibrancy to it. They poured themselves into it, and not surprisingly, they tested better on their mastery of the information around the Underground Railroad.
You spoke earlier about the joy of being an arts teacher yourself and coming across those aha moments that you might help students have. Can you talk about one or two of those? I mean, just things that you didn't see coming, but for whatever reason, something just clicked and the student became really engaged.
Gosh, that's one of those questions where I stop dead because I know too many stories jump through my mind, the stories that really keep me alive. Maybe the early ones are the ones that spring to mind the most. The one that's coming to mind initially is my very first day as a teaching artist. I was in the South Bronx and was in a classroom, a fourth grade classroom, and the teacher had told me we were going to be a little delayed because somebody had broken into this tough school overnight and actually smeared human excrement on the walls of the classroom. And she and I had to clean up the classroom before we could begin my theater session. And I was doing a not very smart activity with, you know, paper plates and drawing a little mask and holding them up to your face and pretending you're a superhero. In hindsight, this was something less than brilliant teaching artistry. But what I noticed was the first kid who wanted to show his work was the runt of the classroom. He was the kid who the bullies picked on. And he wanted to go first, and he had picked such and such a superhero, and he lifted up this mask and took his superhero posture, and the biggest bully in the room went, "Whoa," and took a step back. And it hit me so hard in that moment. Here in one of the most degraded settings you could imagine, the kid who is the butt of everyone's disregard with the silly act of holding a paper plate mask up to his face can make the bully see him anew, take a step back, and go, whoa. And I thought, that is a kind of power I want to be around for the rest of my life. That, way more than getting to play Hamlet three times, way more than all the interesting, high-intensity plays, was right in front of my eyes to get to see that kid's posture amongst his group change permanently, and then be given a parade of opportunities over the years to work that close in settings with students, with teachers, in a thousand different ways. It's a kind of power of the arts that I didn't know was possible until I found myself in the middle of it.
Eric Booth is one of America's most acclaimed teaching artists and trainer of teaching artists. He's also the author of the Music Teaching Artists Bible, Becoming a Virtuoso Educator. Booth spoke with Steve Paulson.